Welcome back to Random Trek, the podcast where I, your host, Scott McNulty, discuss a random episode of Star Trek with a non-random guest. My non-random guest tonight, or whatever time it is you're listening to this, is Stephen Shapansky. Stephen, thank you for joining me.
Thank you for having me on to watch Star Trek, especially an episode from the original series, a show that I have barely dipped into, actually, over the years.
Oh, we're going to talk about that in a second, but how might the people know you?
The people might know me. I do a Doctor Who podcast and have done so for the past 8.5 years called Radio Free Scaro, which has talked about Doctor Who every single week for over 470 episodes as we record this. Yeah, I'm busy enough doing that that I don't need to tell you about the various other guest appearances they might have made. I've been on a couple of recent incomparable network podcasts like Counterclockwise and a game show as well. So you might know me from there as well.
Yes, our sister shows. Mm-hmm. So how off the top, this is a random question for a random track of podcasts. You know off the top of your head, because Doctor Who, right, is the longest running science fiction show in history, right?
Something it certainly like is. Yes, 52 years this coming November.
Which is a long time. How many episodes does that encompass?
I believe, now let me think about this, I think that it encompasses 813, I think, all told. That be it half-hour episodes, 50-minute episodes, a couple 76-minute episodes in there all through the years, you know. So there's about that many.
That is a lot of Doctor Who.
Yeah, and some of them are sort of broken up. Like the classic series that ran for 26 years has like 700 odd episodes, but really it makes up 160 stories because they're like multi-part adventures. So it's a lot more palatable when you look at it that way.
Now, I will admit, I like the reboot Doctor Who. What, 9, 10, and 11, is that right?
And 12 now, too.
And 12, yeah. Oh, that's right. Although I'm a little lukewarm on 12, but that's just me. But I tried when the Christopher Eccleston series came on, and it hooked me in. I tried to watch some of the older Doctor Whos, and I think this is relevant for a discussion because we're watching an original series episode. And when you, 50 years ago, TV was very different.
Mm-hmm.
And, special effects obviously were very different. And British shows in particular, and Doctor Who, I think, in particular, is known for maybe not the greatest special effects. And so it was difficult going for me to watch early Doctor Who episodes. And in fact, I will admit, I gave up.
I can understand that. It's a show that's made like a soap opera would be made, with multi-camera and on videotape and everything. And what's those two? In my opinion, I think it's easier to get into classic Doctor Who when you're a kid, when you sort of don't have expectations like that, as opposed to when you go, hey, let's go watch an Avengers movie, and now let's sit down and watch our first episode of Doctor Who from 1965. It will be a bit of a culture shock.
Yes, and so we're talking about an original series episode. We're talking about, in fact, one of probably the best-known original episodes, at least in Star Trek fandom.
Oh, really?
Yes, well, or maybe just to me, because I really like this episode. Spoiler alert.
Okay.
I like this episode. You may not like this episode, but I like it. In fact, I may say that I love this episode, mostly because I love Trelane. And we're talking the Squire of Gothos. I always said Gothos, but it is clearly Gothos. They say it like 18 times in the show. I think it should be Gothos, but they say Gothos,
mm-hmm.
Which is a season one, episode 18 of the original series. It is always fascinating to me, and I've said this every time we talk about an original series episode, that Star Trek has laid down so much of the quintessential Star Trekiness in the first season of the show. You've got the holy trinity relationship of Spock, McCoy, and Kirk on full display in this episode. You've got, people thrown around. We've got Lieutenant LaSalle and a meteorologist, which is kind of weird. But then you have what is a big recurring thing in Star Trek. An all-powerful being, a seemingly all-powerful being, that Captain Kirk basically tricks into getting away with stuff. And then, of course, this episode has a big twist at the end, which we will get to. Of course, you should have already watched this episode. It is over 50 years old, I think. So if there are spoilers, here's a spoiler. Trelane is a kid, and his parents come and scold him at the end of this episode. So I'm sorry. It's a super old episode of television. Spoilers the spoiler warning has expired, I think, so.
Yeah, and you wouldn't be listening to this if you hadn't watched it, I would hope.
It's true. But I just love that ending, and I think the William Campbell, who plays Trelane, does a tremendous job of, at the beginning of the episode, and he comes up, and we'll get to the recapping quickly, but I just want to talk about Trelane, in that he's kind of calm, cool, and collected, although obsessed with war, which is kind of weird. And then throughout the episode, he becomes more and more kind of petulant and childish until the end, the big reveal, and you're like, oh, yeah, he's just a kid, and his parents scold him and tell him if he doesn't behave, he won't be allowed to make any more planets, which I think is hilarious. Now, what did you think of Trelane as a character?
I thought he was, as it went along, I mean, I'm sure we'll get into this, my knowledge of Trek is hit and miss.
Yes.
But he was very Q-like, I thought, and he sort of was this omnipotent being that sort of, was able to do what he wanted when he wanted, except that he was bested at the end, whereas Q would just sort of fly off and leave Picard in his own machinations, so to speak.
I think many people think Trelane is kind of the blueprint for Q. And in fact, I think, I forget, someone wrote a book that explains the relationship between Q and Trelane. I don't remember what it's called, but I know it exists. I don't remember who wrote it, but that's the things that are easily Googleable. So let's talk about... I went into Doctor Who, and then I got so excited to talk about Trelane that I skipped over the part where we talk about your Star Trek interests. So would you consider yourself a Star Trek fan?
I don't think I would, but I have gone through a couple of bouts, I suppose, of obsessiveness.
You have to get that looked at.
Yeah, I don't know. I can't think of the word. But I was my first exposure to sci-fi, I think, was Star Wars, perhaps even Battlestar Galactica a little bit. It's a mishmash. I think when I was a kid, I saw bits of Star Wars a lot. It was on a free preview of his pay TV channel. I think one of the deals with it signing on is it had to show Star Wars, I think, like three times a week or maybe even three times a day. And so I would go over to my friend's place who had this free channel and would just play in his basement. And Star Wars would just be endlessly looping all day. And so I never actually sat down and watched Star Wars front to back for years after, but I'd seen all the bits. And I think from that I thought, okay, this is what science fiction is. It's a bunch of ships flying around and laser gun battles, and I was completely at home with that. And so I started to try and latch on to other sci-fi franchises. But oddly enough, Star Trek did not do it for me as a kid. I thought it was kind of silly. I thought it would be, you know, like, to be honest, episodes like this would come on. I go, what's going on with this? And I remember I think it's a season 3 episode, from what I call from the episode guides. It's the kids that sort of shake their fists and make things change. And I couldn't remember that, but I thought, oh, this is dumb. And so I would change it. Yeah, I know. Me, a fan of multi-camera videotape, poor effects Doctor Who, and I'm the one that's calling Star Trek silly in that day and age. But and so the original series never really hit me. And until I think about the early 90s, when oddly enough, a friend of mine had the soundtrack of Star Trek VI, the movie. And I really enjoyed it. And so watched the movie and really enjoyed that. And then became a fan of the original series crew through the movies. And so that was a little thing. And then I stopped watching it I watched the odd Next Generation episode. But I didn't get into that until my first year of college, 95-96, and it was on every single night at 12:35 in the morning, so to speak. And so I just started watching every single episode, and then, as you know, by season 3 I was, you know, taping them and making sure I wasn't missing a single one. And then once I was done that, I said, okay, I don't think I ever want to watch Star Trek Next Generation again. And then the last flirtation was the when I worked at a TV station in Edmonton, where I live now, in 98 or 99, I think it was, I was on Saturday morning shifts, and on the satellite feed, I would have some downtime on my work shift, and I would look over the monitor, and there would be what I suppose would be Paramount, would be feeding the next week's episode of Star Trek Deep Space Nine. And I think at that time they were about in season six or something like that. And so, you know, I had nothing to do for 2 hours, so I'd plug some headphones in there and just sort of watch this satellite feed. You know, imagine the power I would have watching Star Trek, you know, episodes
before.
A week before. And I got really hooked into the sort of the story arc from season six, and I became a huge fan of that. And then watched all those episodes front to back. And I think, hand to heart, I think Deep Space Nine would be, even though I've only ever seen TNG and Deep Space Nine once through, I think DS9 is far and away the best of the Star Trek series, if only for Captain Sisko, who I think is an excellent and fun character. And so I haven't watched Deep Space Nine, but I told Erica, who's going through Babylon 5 for her own podcast and showing me that I said, once we're done Babylon 5, I think we should probably watch Deep Space Nine so you can see some of the similarities at the very beginning. But
yeah. That's true. You have to watch all of the numbered space station themes shows. I think that's it's contractually obligated, I believe.
Yeah. So there, that is my long-winded history with Star Trek.
Well, it sounds like, so you have some good Star Trek cred, and it is interesting. We were talking about this before we started recording, and also when we were recording about the differences that 50 years can make in television, right? Because, and I say this every time we watch an original series episode for this podcast, because when I remember in my mind seeing the episodes, they seem so action-packed in my mind, and then I watch them, and I still like them, but there's a lot of they take their time getting places. They kind of meander here and there to get to their point, and it isn't as fast-paced or frenetic as I seem to remember them in my head.
No.
It's a nice change.
It is a nice change. And I know that some episodes are different because this one only had literally one guest actor for the most part, apart from the couple new crew members that we see. So things sort of take, you know, there's not a lot of cross-cutting between different storylines in this one. It's pretty much one main thrust going on. And so whenever something is happening on the planet, it's only happening on the planet, and we're watching it all take place.
That's true. And so the guest star, of course, I mentioned already, is William Campbell, who some may recognize he played another very famous Star Trek character, Koloth, from the Trouble with Tribbles, who's the Klingon commander in that episode, who also shows up in an episode of Deep Space Nine, Blood Oath. He also plays Koloth again. So he has been on two Star Trek series, which is very exciting for him. Of course, he's dead now, so that's what happens if you show up on two Star Trek series. Eventually, you die at like 89 or something. I think he was pretty old. So.
He was old. Was he? Was he also in the Deep Space Nine? What the Tribbles and Tribulations or whatever the hell it was called?
Yes, he was.
Okay,
so let's get into the episode. We've talked a lot about other things, and as I said, this is one of and people who are listening can disagree with me, but I think this is a one of the quintessential Star Trek episodes, mostly because I like all powerful beings and they happen a lot, but this is kind of the blueprint for all powerful being encounters. But it starts off with people just lazing around the bridge drinking coffee out of space styrofoam cups.
I love that. It's a coffee break. It starts off with the coffee break, you know? Like, DeSalle sort of leaning forward on his console. Just, you know, I like the fact that they're, like, hurrying through space to get to this, what, Beta 6 colony or something with some supplies. And they just, nope, you know what? Let's just chill for a few minutes. Let's just take a break. Take a break and enjoy some coffee.
Everybody's drinking coffee. The yeoman, the poor yeoman, has to walk around with her little tray and give all the dudes and Uhura coffee. And then I thought to myself, they seem to be placing these cups of coffee very haphazardly on their consoles.
Dangerously close.
It does not seem like a good thing to have a big cup of liquid on consoles, which we have seen time and time again just blow up in flames. So I question the actions there. But
who is responsible for health and safety on the Enterprise at this stage?
I think they'd probably died within 2 hours of the Enterprise leaving, and then they never replaced them.
That makes sense.
But yeah, so they're styrofoam cups that have been painted silver to look futuristic, which I appreciate. Nice touch. And so the Enterprise is flying through this star desert, which I just love that phrase, star desert.
Which is Spock doesn't. Spock hates that, and he has to shoot down McCoy about that.
Yes, yeah, so Captain Kirk and McCoy wistfully think about deserts and all the wonderful things you find in deserts, and Spock is like, you guys are crazy. Deserts suck. I come from a desert planet. Believe me. He doesn't say that, but...
No.
In this episode, I'm not even sure Vulcan was established as a desert planet yet, but it is now. So, Spock, yeah, he doesn't like it. And this sets up many times when McCoy in this episode and Spock do a little verbal sparring, and McCoy is none too pleased with Spock's logical brain.
For the first time and last time in the history of the show.
That's right. This is it.
This is it, the one time.
They make up. Everything's fine.
Yep. It's kind of like Elementary, My Dear Watson. It only ever happens once. We just make up all this, you know, this horrid relationship they have in our minds now.
No. But then, and then so they are in this space, regional space with no stars and galaxies or star systems. And then they come across a planet that's just kind of hanging out. And in a very un-Captain Kirk-like thing, he's like, well, we don't have time to explore this planet. Record it, and let's go, because we need to get to this planet with our life-saving supplies, I guess they have. I don't know. But this planet will not be avoided. I think what Sulu is about to put in the course to change course or something.
That's right.
And he gets teleported away. And everyone's like, what? And then nobody notices except Captain Kirk.
No. But he conveniently stands up. He sort of like gets a bit dizzy and stands up. Because that's the first thing you should do when you get dizzy is stand up so
that's
you can
right.
have further to fall. mostly so that when they show up on the planet later on, him and Captain Kirk are standing next to each other, you see.
Yes, it all makes sense. And then Captain Kirk stands up because he's shocked that Sulu has disappeared. And he disappears. And then Lieutenant DeSalle says, Spock, they're gone. And Spock looks up and he says, oh, let's go to red alert. And that's the teaser.
Emergency full reverse or something. Didn't he say something like that?
Oh, yes, he did. He wants to get the hell out of town.
Yeah, exactly. Quick, we've lost him. Let's go.
Finally, I am captain. and that is the opener, which is, I think, an effective opener. It's kind of like, you know, a little glimpse into the day-to-day operations of the Enterprise. And then something unusual happens and the captain is gone along with Sulu.
It was. There's a running theme throughout this, and maybe this happens in all Star Trek episodes in the original series. I'm not sure, but there seems to be this notepad that seems to keep getting passed around.
Yes.
I think it gets passed, like Uhura has it at one point, and then Spock takes it once the Act 1 begins, and he sets it down and starts scrolling on it. And I remember later on in the episode when all the crew beam back to the ship and they're trying to get out of there before the planet chases them. And the first thing Jaeger does is grab that little notepad from Uhura and give it to Kirk.
Yes.
And he signs something really like, is this like what? Like a, is this like an expense order for like a shipment of beets or something? Like, I don't know what is so important that needs to be signed, constantly signed and checked on this ship.
I made a note of that as well because I thought that was so weird. They have just escaped from this deadly situation, and Captain Kirk immediately has to sign a form.
Exactly. You know, like, I'm a devil-may-care kind of captain as long as I'm signing the proper form.
That's right. I've got to fill out this form about undiscovered, newly discovered planets and superhumans. Yeah. So let me just sign this and notarize it. We'll pass it around.
I know exactly. Like, I was never sure of that. I don't know if that was a thing in all Star Trek episodes or if that was just this.
The original series has a lot of people carrying that thing and signing it for inexplicable reasons. I don't know why. I don't know what they're doing with it. I'm sure the internet can tell me kind of the canonical reason why that thing is being passed around, but I do not know off the top of my head. But yes, there's a lot of paperwork in Starfleet.
It really is. It's not as romantic as all that now, is it?
That's right. You know, you have to... The dilithium crystals are expensive. You have to figure out where you're going. People have expense reports. It's hard. And then, let's see. Oh, and so Kirk, Sulu, they're gone. Spock, logical Spock, is in charge of the Enterprise. And so he wants to figure out what's going on. So he takes his time. It takes about 4 hours, they say, to evaluate the situation, scan the planet, consult with a meteorologist.
It's like, what's the weather like?
That's right.
It could be cloudy. Will we need an umbrella?
tell me what's going on. Oh. DeSalle is like, we need to get down there. I want to beam down to the planet immediately. And McCoy's like, yeah, we have to do something. Let's beam down to the planet. And this is when Spock turns to Yeager and says, as your proficiency in geophysics is in need, tell us about the atmosphere of this planet. And he's like, well, there's no soil. The atmosphere is deadly. Volcanoes are constantly going off. It's super hot. And any life as we know it could not survive on this planet.
Mm-hmm.
And then Spock is like, well, that's why we're not beaming down.
So probably should stay here, right? Yeah, it's pretty bad. Pretty bad. We should maybe just chill out here. Yeah,
sounds like a pretty logical reason. Mm-hmm. Everybody's quite upset about this. But Yeager does mention, well, without the proper protection, life support systems, you can't just beam down there.
Which is a gas mask, apparently.
Which is ridiculous.
Yeah. Basically, if you're going to paint your house, just basically get the same mask, put over your face, you can land on any alien planet.
Any planet that has constantly exploding volcanoes and inferno tornadoes.
Yep.
You're fine.
Make sure you have your mask on at all times. Then you'll be all
right. I was watching this show with my wife, and she was like, shouldn't they have like some kind of suit or something? Because it's like super hot on this planet, they think. Mm-hmm. And I was like, yeah, I think so. But no, it's probably too expensive.
Yep.
I've been reading a book, These Are the Voyages, which chronicles the making of the first season of the original series. And they had a lot of issues with budget, going over budget chronically. So,
oh, really? I'm imagining that this episode with its two or three sets and one guest actor, I imagine was probably one of the cost-saving episodes.
Yes, and they were always over... one of the reasons they were over was that all the directors always took so much time to get through and film. And this episode, if memory serves correctly, was shot very quickly as well. So it came in on time and about on budget. So they were quite pleased with it.
Mm-hmm. And it wasn't Shades of Grey. And that's the important thing.
That's right. That is always a saving grace for exactly. Every episode except Shades of Grey.
Shades of Grey, which I think was created if only to sort of eliminate any debate as to what the worst episode of Star Trek ever was. It's obviously going to just be Shades of Grey.
It's really bad.
Yeah.
But yeah, back to this episode,
yes.
Which may or may not be good, but it is not Shades of Grey.
No.
And so they decide to go beam down anyway, right? So DeSalle and Yeager and McCoy are going to beam down. Scotty is like, send me down as well. And Spock says, no, Scotty, you and I are too important to beam down.
Yeah, applaudable logic from Spock, and that he, the commanding officer, stays on the ship, which is pretty much what every single captain should do.
Yes.
And precisely what every captain hasn't done in the history of Star Trek. And I like that, you know, if Kirk had been there, he says, okay, said you, and maybe about four or five red shirts down there.
Yep.
But no, Spock sends a doctor, a meteorologist, and a command officer down there. And I remember when I saw that, it's like, okay, I don't know who these two guys are, but they're not wearing red shirts, so I'm really conflicted as to what's going to happen here.
Are they going to die, or they're not going to die?
Exactly, because they probably killed a couple blue shirts in the day, didn't they?
Yeah, I would think so.
Yeah.
I thought it was weird that they didn't send down any security with them at all.
I know.
They only sent three dudes down there. And then with their little gas masks, and they beam down, and oh, it turns out that their sensors there's an anomaly or something, and it's a breathable atmosphere, and there's like, well, it's clearly on a studio set, but it's meant to be outdoors, and they're trees and stuff. So they take off their ineffectual masks anyway, which if they had beamed down to the planet normally, they just would have died with those masks anyway, I think.
Yep.
And then they do something that I think is even crazier. There are only three of them. They're on a strange planet. Their captain and Sulu have been abducted. And what is the first thing they do? They immediately go in three different directions.
Everyone split up.
Everyone go figure out stuff.
Someone find the volcano and get report back.
That's right. And I thought, that is really weird. You should have at least a buddy system. There should have been six of them. Two of them each go in a different direction.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, nothing comes of it because DeSalle goes like 2 feet and notices a giant castle.
Yeah.
And so they're like, oh, that's probably where we should go. And that's where they go. And they sneak into this castle. They don't really sneak in. They go through the front door. Mm-hmm. And they see a bizarre collection of artifacts and decorations and things that look very earthy. Mm-hmm. Not as in dirt, but from the planet Earth. And also the salt vampire from the Man Trap.
Right.
Which McCoy kind of looks at but doesn't talk about at all, which is weird because McCoy is like the main character in that episode. So you would think he would say something, but he doesn't seem too surprised that the salt vampire is there, but whatever.
Perhaps he's forgotten that.
Or he might. He just blocked it out of his memory.
Yeah. I'm assuming that most of the set then is pretty much redressed from other past Star Trek episodes and perhaps past Desilu productions, perhaps.
I would think so. I think there was an episode of I Love Lucy in which they went to France and they visited this set.
Yes. The Lucille Ball clip of her playing the harpsichord is a comedy classic.
That's right. Look it up on YouTube.
Yeah.
Fantastic. And so they find, they go in, everything, there's like these weird things on display, there's lots of weapons on display, there are flags and things, and also on display, Captain Kirk and Sulu in kind of a weird green light, and they're immobilized. Mm-hmm. And frozen in place.
Well, as best as Shatner and T'Kay can stand still. But
it's hard to stand still.
It is. It really is. And you know what? In 1967 with a 14-inch TV screen, I bet you they look pretty still to viewers back in those days.
I bet. And that's one of the problems. I watch this on Blu-ray. And every time we talk about the original series, I have to bring it up. The Blu-rays are beautifully, pristinely, redone. They look wonderful. They redid the special effects, so those all look great too. The problem with it is that it is so clear. Mm-hmm. The original series was never meant to be seen as clearly as I'm watching it. And it shows a lot of problems with their sets and props and things. Like every communicator has a weird scuff mark on it.
And I'm
like,
oh, does it really?
It does.
Oh, wow.
And I think they that would have never, in the 60s, you would have never seen that. And you can also see, it's not so bad in this episode, but obviously they have stunt doubles that come in, and it is painfully obvious when you're watching it in Blu-ray about the stunt doubles.
I know. Star Trek is not alone in that. Erica and I have been watching The Prisoner mm-hmm. on Blu-ray as well. She's never seen it, so I've been showing episodes of that to her. And you can easily tell when the stunt double is on and when it's Patrick McGoohan. And the same goes for Doctor Who. And I remember watching the War of the Worlds film from 1953 and the iconic mm-hmm. shot of the spaceship rising up out of the crater, which looked great and SD, I remember at the time. You look at it on a Blu-ray, you see about 27 different strings hauling that thing out of that crater, and all of a sudden the magic is kind of gone.
Oh, that's sad. There are some things we're just not meant to see.
Exactly.
That is what we've learned. So, mm-hmm. But I still cannot resist to watch it on Blu-ray because it looks so good.
Oh, exactly.
Oh, it's so sad. I have a giant TV. I don't want to watch an SD. That's why when I have to watch an episode of Voyager, which is bad in and of itself, there's no HD version of it. So it's Voyager and it's an SD. At least with Deep Space Nine, it's an SD, but it's Deep Space Nine. So
yeah.
Anyway, that's a tangent. But
it is.
We haven't even gotten to Trelane yet.
I know. We're rapidly approaching our self-imposed time limit. So
we have to quickly. So they find the Captain Kirk and Sulu, and suddenly they hear harpsichord music, because that's what you're going to hear mm-hmm. if you find your fellow people in this creepy castle thing on a weird planet. They turn around, and there's a man dressed in quite elaborate costumery playing the harpsichord and greeting them. And Memory Alpha, which is my source for all things Star Trek, describes him as a foppish figure in a blue coat and ruffled shirt, which I believe is a good description.
I think so. He reminds me of a poor man's Tony Curtis, I think, does William Campbell in the role of Trelane.
I think that's fairly accurate.
Yeah, because Erica was thinking, like, who does he remind me of? And I think I just thought Tony Curtis, but not quite Tony Curtis, you know?
Not as he's TV Tony Curtis.
Exactly, yeah.
And he introduces himself as General Trelane, retired.
Retired, yeah.
He says that a couple times and it amuses me. The Squire of Gothos. And he says, oh, you probably want your friends back. So he waves his hand and Kirk and Sulu are reanimated and none too pleased. Sulu is really upset about this whole situation. Kirk is keeping his cool.
Yeah.
DeSalle also not very happy with the whole situation.
No, DeSalle is sort of the token hothead, I think. I was waiting. I mean, he gets frozen a couple times, and mm-hmm. I was waiting for him to be evaporated or something like that at some point. But Trelane is a benign entity, I guess.
He is mercurial, yeah. and kind of unfocused, I think. He just, his focus goes from place to place, but he is obsessed, maybe not obsessed, but throughout this episode, he really wants to impress Captain Kirk for some reason, and probably because he is obsessed with warfare, and he makes a comment about how humans are one of the few species that prey on other members of their own species. He talks about how he thought, he was observing Earth, and he couldn't miss the opportunity to actually meet some Earth people, so he basically made the Enterprise stop here. But it turns out he's been observing the Earth 900 years ago.
Yeah.
So he didn't quite factor in the 900 light year delay from where he is to Earth as he was watching it. And so his timing's a little off. He was asking about Napoleon and all these things, and they're like, well, we don't know. And that timing thing is at the end of the episode. Captain Kirk makes a weird reference to curls and inkwells, and I thought to myself, would somebody really in like the 27th century even make that reference? But
well, isn't it? I think I read this that they hadn't quite established when Star Trek takes place at this point, because I've always just been under the assumption that it's been the 23rd century for the original series, isn't it?
I think it is. I don't remember.
Okay,
but still. That's a long time away from when people were dipping curls in inkwells.
It is, but then again, how can people in the far future know the exact details of what people did in the past, right?
It is true. It is a mystery that will never be solved.
Mm-hmm.
So Trelane is weird. He's got a lot of powers. He freezes people. DeSalle is... Jaeger introduces himself. And Trelane does this little German dance thing. Jaeger is slightly offended, and he says, I'm a scientist, not a warrior.
Mm-hmm.
And he talks French to DeSalle. DeSalle doesn't speak French, so...
It's a shame that he didn't actually say, I'm a scientist, not a warrior. You know, just to sort of upstage McCoy in that instance.
That's true. Then Kirk's like, well, we gotta go.
Yeah.
He's like, well, you're not leaving. And then he transports Kirk into the toxic atmosphere of the planet, just to make a point, and brings it back. It's very smoky on the planet, apparently.
Mm-hmm.
Kirk coughs a lot.
And McCoy does nothing to help him. He just sort of stands there thinking, that. Yeah, he's fine. He's fine.
Fine.
Yeah.
McCoy is perplexed by Trelane, who does not appear to register on his medical tricorder, which then leads... who is it? DeSalle, I think someone says. Oh, no, Sulu's like, oh, so he's dead.
Yeah.
And McCoy's like, well, he just doesn't exist at all.
Mm-hmm.
Which is a big distinction. And so that is... and then, so what happens? It is clear...
They pop back to the ship, doesn't it? Don't they? Or
they go back to the ship. Oh, yes. Trelane is not going to let them go back to the ship. So then we cut back to the ship, where Spock and Scotty are talking about this problem. They can't find anybody on the planet. But then somehow they are able to figure out some life signs. So they beam up Spock and Scotty. That's mm-hmm. their names. It's hard to say Spock and Scotty.
It is. That's why they never hang out together. So.
That's right. And they also hate each other. Come up with the idea of, well, let's just beam up all life forms on the planet to the Enterprise. And luckily... there are only three or four, however many people were down there, life forms. Five
at that point, yeah.
Yes. And so everybody beams up. Trelane is not excited about this.
Mm-hmm.
And this is when they beam up, and then Captain Kirk immediately has to sign something. And also there's another weird thing. They beam up. Kirk talks to Spock, and he's like, how did you do this, Spock? And he explains it. And then Kirk's like, okay, well, let's immediately hightail it out of here. They walk out. Spock stays in the transporter room. Walks over to the console.
Yeah.
Presses a button.
What is that all about?
And then he leaves.
You know, with the original series version of Chief O'Brien standing mm-hmm. there, like, you didn't trust him to be able to, like, you know, press that. I don't know. And the camera, like, hangs on it. Like, doesn't focus in on it. But the scene lasts for 2 or 3 seconds longer. And I was very confused about that.
Yeah, but, you made me think, why didn't, maybe they just needed, they were running out, they needed to pad it a little, so they needed a couple of seconds.
We're so, 3 seconds short. Leonard, right. If you could touch the console, I think.
That would be awesome.
That would help us out, yeah.
And Leonard's like, all right, I'll do it, but yeah. I don't know why. And then, Trelane, they want to get away, so you think, oh, well, the episode's over, but it's like only 20 minutes in. Mm-hmm. Unlike this podcast.
Right.
And Trelane appears on the bridge, and he's like, I did not like you leaving. That's not very nice. He has a nice thing with Spock, where he mm-hmm. doesn't like Spock at all. He says, oh, he's not quite human. And he also says a line, what does he say? I wrote it down, but now I can't find it. Where is it? Captain Kirk says something about, he asks Captain Kirk to scold right. Spock for saving them, basically.
And he goes, on the contrary, I condemn his action.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And Trelane says, but I don't like him. Which I just think is the way William Campbell says some of these lines, I just think is perfect. The way he says that. And I love Spock also is not very impressed with Trelane. And Leonard Nimoy he has established, obviously, the prototype of the Vulcan. And mm-hmm. few people who have played Vulcans in Star Trek can express the withering disdain that Leonard Nimoy was able to do with Spock with so very little emoting. You just know, you can tell from the way he's looking at Trelane that he has no respect whatsoever for this all-powerful being.
Yeah, he has some great lines later on once they beam mm-hmm. down to the planet again, where it's, you know, I don't like intellect without reason or something. I can't remember what he was saying to him, but he doesn't bat an eyebrow when he says it to him, but you could just sort of sense the seething yes. Contempt that he has for Trelane.
Yes, and so then he's like, okay, well, if you're not going to play by my rules, I'll just transport everybody down to my little planet. So he takes everybody, including Uhura and Yeoman Ross. And then there's some weird, uncomfortable kind of flirting that Trelane does with Uhura and Yeoman Ross, which reminds you, oh, yes, this was the 60s.
It was uncomfortable at times looking back through the spyglass that is the hindsight. But
yes. The word Nubian was used.
Mm-hmm.
It was, of its time, let's just say.
Yeah, and then, you know, when Trelane starts dancing with the yeoman there mm-hmm. for several minutes on end, you know, even forcing her to wear a fancy dress and everything, and they ignore her plight of this very awkward and uncomfortable dance that she's probably having to endure while they sort of talk over their plans, and then, you know, later on, she sort of goes, oh, Captain, it's all right. I said, no, it's not,
no,
please.
No, it really is. And then, we're skipping ahead, but then eventually, spoiler alert, they get back onto the Enterprise, and Yeoman Ross is still in this ridiculous dress, and she says to Captain Kirk, after I think she hands him that pad again,
yep.
Can I take a moment and change out of this ridiculous costume? She doesn't say ridiculous, but and into my uniform. And Captain Kirk gives her like the most lascivious look.
Yes.
And he's like, oh, sure.
Looks her up and down, then watches her go, and sort of like rubs his face a little bit, looks over, and they go, whoa, okay, all right, you know, wait till off hours, Captain.
That's
okay.
Right. It could only have been made worse if he had went, hubba, hubba.
I'm sure, I'm just getting the impression that maybe the thing they're all signing is like release forms of some sort, you know, waivers.
Sexual harassment forms.
Exactly. You signed it. Everyone on this bridge signed this thing. You all saw it. Yeah.
Several times.
Yes, many times, including in a red alert situation. So
just in case.
There should be no questions asked at this point.
Captain Kirk is creepy, mm-hmm. Trelane is very creepy, and then through some specious, I believe, reasoning, Captain Kirk and Spock deduce that since Trelane likes to stand by this mirror, the mirror is powering his powers, which he can change matter into other things and do all kinds of wacky stuff,
mm-hmm.
which I don't think really follows or makes any sense.
No, because he beamed up to the... Well, he popped up to the ship without the mirror.
Yeah, so. He didn't need that mirror.
Mm-hmm.
But they decide this is the mirror, and so Captain Kirk says, okay, I'm going to just make him mad, use my reasoning, and then somehow break his machine. Which works, because he tells Yeoman Ross to not dance with Trelane, because Kirk doesn't like it. Which I thought also a weird choice of phrase. And then he smacks Trelane with a glove. He does all the things. And so Trelane's like, oh, let's have a duel. They have a duel. Luckily, Trelane has dueling pistols. They decide to have this duel. Trelane says, oh, I hardly ever miss. And since you challenged me, I should go first. So he does. Trelane, for some reason, decides to shoot the ceiling instead of shooting Captain Kirk. And then he says, my fate is in your hands, Captain Kirk. And then Captain Kirk does not shoot Trelane, but he shoots the mirror.
Mm-hmm.
Which... I can only assume Trelane is storing lots of wacky sound effects behind that mirror.
I thought all of a sudden I had to like almost look around like, where is the Looney Tunes cartoon playing? Is it on the second TV? I'm not too sure what's happening now.
Yeah, there was the slide whistles and boings.
Yeah.
It was an odd choice. Usually Star Trek has some really good sound effects, even for the 60s. These sound effects, really weird.
Straight from the archives as well, I think. Everything was pretty much stock, I think.
That's, I think you're probably right. Yeah. And so suddenly the lights are flickering, everything's going crazy, because that machine, in fact, was focusing the power or something to Trelane. Then they were able to beam away again, and Trelane is very unhappy. And so the Enterprise thinks that they're scot-free. And they go away.
Well, thankfully, they still have Commander Scott on.
That's right. They do. He did not beam down, so they still have him. And they try to escape. And I watched this with the enhanced special effects, so I don't remember how it looked originally. But with the enhanced special effects, it was kind of cool because basically it turns into a chase scene between a planet and a starship.
Yeah, I was kind of disappointed. I mean, I watched this on Netflix, and they have also the enhanced special effects versions here as well. And in a way, I thought, oh, that looks, you know, they look really good. They look like they really blend in with what might have been done on a bigger budget in 1966. But in a way, I kind of thought, oh, it's a shame that I'm not really watching the original, you know, ropey effects that would have been done. But they look good, I guess.
Yes, and on the Blu-rays, you can turn off the enhanced special effects.
That's handy. That's handy. Yes. There's no George Lucasing on the Star Trek DVDs. No,
they decided if you want to see the original, you could see the original. If you want the kind of in the spirit of, but in with our technology, you can watch that. I thought briefly of switching it off, but then I forgot as I was watching it. So I don't know what it looks, but it looks pretty good. So they try to fly away. The planet basically chases after them, and there are many tense scenes, maybe too many scenes of them issuing navigation orders to get away from the planet. The planet keeps moving around. It may have went on a tad too long, but it was still pretty good. And so Kirk decides at one point, okay, we're not going to – obviously, this planet is not letting us leave, so let's get into orbit, and I will beam down and take care of this.
Mm-hmm.
And Captain – I think McCoy's like, you can't beam down there. And Kirk is like, I'm going to do it. And so he does. And so he beams down. And Trelane has decided that now it is time for court, and Kirk must stand trial for his actions. And there is a very effectively shot, I think. So there's a court. Trelane's dressed as a judge, and there is a shadow of a noose in the background, which I thought was kind of creepy and cool looking. And clearly, Trelane has decided that Kirk is guilty and should hang. And then Kirk is like, yeah, well, you could hang me, but wouldn't that be boring? And Trelane's like, well, this is all kind of easy. And Kirk is like, all right, well, why don't we do something? Let's make something a little more interesting, shall we? And Trelane's like, yes, why don't I hunt you on the planet? But make sure, don't make it easy.
Yeah, I think that was almost Kirk's suggestion. I think if this episode was done in TNG or something, it was 5 minutes shorter, I think that courtroom scene would have been the first to go. I think they could have just gone straight to the
chasing
duel scene, I think, at that point.
Yes. And so Trelane, he says, oh, why don't you let my ship go? And then you can chase me. And Trelane's like, okay, well, you can call them and say they can go. And so Kirk's like, all right. So he runs out. He runs like 4 feet from yep. Trelane's front door and attempts to hail the Enterprise. He can't get to the Enterprise. And then out comes Trelane because he is going to chase him with a sword.
Yeah. Well, he gives him a good 10 to 15 second head start. So good does. Sporting of him, really. It's very fair. Sporting. Yeah.
And then there is probably, once again, slightly too long sequence
yes.
of Kirk and Trelane running after each other and kind of dueling. Only one of them has a sword. So the sword, like Kirk knocks the sword out of Trelane's hand once and picks it up. And Trelane blinks out when Kirk tries to swing the sword through him. And that's all great. Maybe a little too long. And then when it looks like Kirk is about to lose it, suddenly, two kind of energy orbs appear.
Before that, he sort of like, he, for some reason, I don't know what Kirk's motive was here at this point, because he sort of, you know, snaps at him and takes a sword and breaks it.
Right. He breaks it over his knee.
And then slaps him a couple times. I never got the impression that Kirk knew that Trelane was a child and that treating him this way would sort of beat him, and I didn't pick up if those actions were related to the orb parents showing up at the time. Is there an explanation for that, or did I just miss it?
I think that there is no explanation. I think that okay. Kirk is just notices that Trelane is a little unstable, and so mm-hmm. he thinks if I push him, he will lose all reason, and I can escape him more readily. I don't know if that's true or not, but that's what I gathered. And then, unrelatedly, Trelane's parents show up, mm-hmm. And they're like, Trelane, cut it out. If you can't take care of your pets, you can't have pets at all, which I find amusing. Again, I think the whole parent-Trelane thing is very amusing, but also kind of sad, because Trelane immediately switches from... Throughout the whole episode, he's kind of been devolving into, from the starting kind of a cool, collected guy, into frazzled and kind of petulant. Mm-hmm. And at the very last scene, it is clear that he is like a little boy, and he was like, but I was winning, and I don't want to go home.
Yeah, and you can almost see a bit of pity in yep. Kirk's face as he's watching this play out.
Yes, it does make him a rather pathetic character. And his parents are like, now you know... that these people have spirit or will or something, and so something they will bad. Always win. You have great power, but you don't have the same spirit, so these people will always win. And then they apologize to Captain Kirk. They say, well, we didn't really know you were so weak. had we known, we wouldn't have let Trelane do this.
Now we're taking him in for a timeout. And
that's right.
Yeah.
He won't be able to make planets for at least 2 millennia, and everything will be fine. And then, so yeah, that's fine. Kirk goes back home to the Enterprise. Spock. And then there's another weird scene in which Spock says, Captain, we have to fill out a report.
Yeah, I know. Like, again with the reports.
Why? Paperwork. And he says, how would you describe Trelane? And Captain Kirk says, what does he say? A little boy and something else.
That, a little boy. A really nasty little boy or I can't remember what the words
were. A naughty small child.
Naughty little boy. Something like that. Yeah.
And Spock. And this is where he talks about curls and inkwells and the hijinks that little baby Spock got up to which Spock does not agree.
No.
And we end with Spock making kind of almost rolling his eyes and raising his eyebrows. And that's yeah. the end of the episode.
And the jokey, typical end of Star Trek music going on.
Yep.
Which every time I hear it, I think there's going to be a laugh track going on and almost an applause, but it never happens. I think there should be another alternate cut, which I think dubs on laughter tracks and applause for some Star Trek episodes.
The beginning of it will be Star Trek is filmed in front of a live studio audience.
Exactly. You know, the second like Spock walks onto the bridge, the applause happens.
It's like when Kramer comes in on Seinfeld.
Exactly, yeah. Gets a walk-on, you know?
So that, I will say, this episode has its problems, and it is 50 years old, so it has weird pacing for our modern tastes. But you're a Doctor Who fan, so that should be fine. but I love this episode of Star Trek for mostly because of William Campbell and the wonderful character that he's created with Trelane. What do you think of this episode?
Well, I'm glad I watched it twice, because the first time round I thought, I don't know about this. when the episode ended, and on Netflix, the episode after that is Arena, and I'm thinking, oh, that's what I've always wanted to see. It's where he fights the Gorn. Mm-hmm. I've never seen it. I just know it from legend. But the second time round, it's funny that the reason I like the movie so much is because of the cast, the main cast. I like their mm-hmm. relationship together. So any episode that sort of focuses on that and has a lot of screen time for the main cast, I have time for. So I think the second time around, I was enjoying, the interactions between Sulu and Spock and everyone else. So I think I liked it a lot more the second time around. But I don't think I could like it as much as you do, because apparently you rate it very highly indeed.
I do. For whatever reason, I really like this episode. I think it's because I like Q, and I like... So Trelane obviously reminds me very much of Q. I know our friend Jason Snell hates Q, so I imagine he may also hate this episode. But he is wrong. And he may like this episode. Who knows? I can't speak for Jason Snell. Mm-hmm. I am not a Jason Snell speaker.
No.
Yeah. Well, Stephen, I believe we are done.
Well, it was a pleasure. It was a pleasure watching a Star Trek episode randomly.
Next on Random Trek, Deep Space Nine, Season 3, Equilibrium.